Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm excited. I believe it was last Sunday or the Sunday before we tried to have Andrea Jenkins, council member, on to discuss cultural districts in Minneapolis, and she is joining us tonight. How are you, Andrea, with your busy self?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing well. My goodness, we've been through a lot since 2020, and you've been at the forefront of some of this. And I'm really curious about cultural districts in Minneapolis. I had heard about them before, read a little bit about them, but can you give us the definition of what a cultural district is?
Well, good evening, Geraldine, and to all of your listeners out there. I'm honored and delighted to be here with you today and that we could finally make it work. Cultural districts are parts of town that reflect a certain cultural identity. So, for example, you know, a lot of people travel around and almost every city has a Chinatown. I think that would be considered a cultural district. In Atlanta, there's sort of the MLK and, you know, sort of all the things that associated with the King household and Ebenezer Church. Like, that's a cultural district. But here in Minneapolis, how we have defined cultural districts is a community or a corridor. In fact, we define it as a corridor. So one contiguous street that represents a particular culture, and then the city of Minneapolis will try to uplift and support that culture through business and economic development activities, through supporting cultural activities such as, so for example, Broadway Avenue is a designated cultural district, and one of the things that they do annually is an event called Flow. And so the city, we will try to support that kind of activity by waiving fees for police
protection
and, you know, closing off the street and, you know, getting those waivers that you kind of need to pay for to make those things happen. We also target our program called the Commercial Property Development Fund, which helps small business owners to purchase properties that they have their business in, but they don't necessarily own the property. And we only target those funds to cultural districts. So we have seven cultural districts in the city of Minneapolis. One is the 38th Street corridor, which is unfortunately now where George Floyd was murdered. Yes. But we have been, you know, that's been a African-American cultural district for decades and decades. So we're we're really trying to highlight and uplift the contributions that African Americans have made to this city, particularly along 38th Street. Another cultural district is Lake Street. Then you go down to Franklin, which is a Native American sort of cultural district. Mm-hmm. Cedar Riverside, Somali, Broadway is a more African American cultural district, and Central Avenue. And so Central Avenue and Lowry Avenue. So these are some of the cultural districts that we have identified in the city, and we try to prioritize resources, prioritize technical assistance, and really try to highlight and uplift the cultural events that define those communities.
Yeah, I think what surprised me the most about this is that city officials really felt that the desires of the community members really wanted to prevent displacement of residents in gentrifying areas. And I was, you know, it just kind of shook me when I read that, because we know that in so many of these cultural districts, gentrification is real and it is happening, right? So that said, do the cultural districts stop mm-hmm. displacement of residents?
Well, you know, we hope it does. You know, I'm not sure if there's one specific way to stop displacement, although I would say that probably the biggest way to try to stop displacement is through ownership, right? And so therein comes our Commercial Property Development Fund, which we try to help small business owners who have been in the community, who represent cultural communities, to purchase the building and properties that they live on. In addition, we have home ownership opportunities for homeowners along and around those cultural districts to try to ensure that we don't let gentrification displace, long-term community members. It's very much a deep concern, and I think we've recognized that and really trying to bring in some tools to help eliminate that. And like I said, I think home ownership and ownership, period, is one way to really combat displacement.
So what type of tools are you speaking of?
So one is the Commercial Development Property Loan Fund. Mm-hmm. We also have home ownership opportunities and home ownership support.
We do, because over here in North Minneapolis, there are so many seniors that have been losing their homes over, you know, maybe a decade or so. And it's really disturbing mm-hmm. to me. So I know that we're looking out for, we're trying to define and watch out for all of the changes that are happening in these cultural districts. But I do want to talk a little bit about the Minneapolis 2040 plan. I was just telling my mm-hmm. in-studio producer earlier tonight, there's always a plan, and they plan way out. You know, to make sure there's plenty of time for them to get done what they want to get done. Would you agree with that?
I do agree with that. So, you know, the 2040 plan, so just for pure context, each city in the state is required to submit a 10-year plan every 10 years and submit that to the Metropolitan Council. Mm-hmm. Or to the state of Minnesota. So you have to say, how are we gonna manage building housing, economic development, sewers, and roads in the next 10 years? The 2040 plan that I think you're referring to is what we're calling the Minneapolis 2040 plan. And that was really designed to, again, help with the displacement that you talked about. By building more housing, we're able to lower the cost of housing in the city. And up until now, there have been sort of rules and zoning regulations that says Minneapolis can only build single-family housing. And if you want to build multifamily housing, you have to get waivers and variances, and there's only certain places that you can do this. And so what we did, what the 2040 2040 plan does is eliminate those zoning regulations and allows you to build duplexes, triplexes, multifamily homes all over the city. The practice of only building single-family homes was a way to keep white neighborhoods white. You know, if you only have single-family homes and then you redline and you sort of obstruct people's opportunity to purchase, you can keep the community white. You know, I've been thinking a lot about Lorraine Hansberry and her play Raisin in the Sun. Mm. And that was, you know, that was a part of the younger families' challenge, right? Is that they couldn't buy a house in the white neighborhood. I mean, they had challenges anyway. And that has been a real reality here in Minneapolis. So the 2040 plan, which right now the city is being sued for by people who want to maintain the status quo. And, you know, so we are litigating that in court. I think the city is going to prevail. And
I'm surprised that these are seven. Excuse me for interrupting. But these seven cultural districts, are we ever going to add more of them?
You know, I mean, I think they are really connected to, we try to do our homework up front. So we have it where we have low income tracts based on census tracts and other, there's a process called ACP 50, which stands for areas of concentrated poverty. So we looked all around the city, and these were the areas where we found that those realities were happening. There's not a lot of other places where that is going on. And if we have so many, if everything is a cultural district, then it really doesn't mean much, right? So I think we want to limit cultural districts at this point and try to really understand how they are functioning and how they are working. And if we need to, I think that's something that we can look at and think about in the future. But right now, I think that we have them in the right place, Broadway, Lake Street, Cedar Riverside, Franklin Avenue, again, the Native American community, 38th in Chicago, which is African American community, which I represent. It includes Sebastiani Community Center, George Floyd Square, so many black and brown owned businesses that used to be there that are coming back. You know, so I think we have them in some pretty good places. I will not say that there shouldn't be opportunities to have more in the future.
Thank you for that. That's what I was waiting for. Because here's the deal. When you said that funds are being are involved in this, then we should absolutely have more. If there are funds where we could really make a statement with one of the cultural districts, you know, a new one that's coming forward, that sort of thing, why not? Why not ask for more? Because really, it's the people that live in these cultural districts that have an understanding of what that means and has an understanding, they have an understanding of what living in those districts really mean to them. So that's important. Sure. So even if we have seven right now, if we get, you know, maybe three more, I'm not upset about that. If there's funding for it, I would love to see that, because it really does move people to say, I live in this cultural district and it means a lot to me. And I've heard that before.
Yeah, no, that's real. That's very real. And, you know, we've been kind of on the neighborhood process in the city of Minneapolis, but never really having districts. And so, but it's also, so like we have the Northeast District, and I mean, what do you call it? The North Loop.
Yeah.
You know, that's
North Loop. Okay.
But they don't really need the resources, right? I mean, it's a, it's a pretty stable income community. And while it is a cultural district, there's a baseball stadium, the basketball, the food, the restaurants, theaters, and entertainment. Mm-hmm. But they don't need resources. Broadway, Lake Street, they need that kind of support.
Exactly. I've been reading from an article that's called A History of the Minneapolis Cultural Districts by Tiffany Bowie. And it's really mm-hmm. important for us to know exactly what it means when you say cultural districts. I will say that they consider this a national movement to create cultural districts. In fact, in the article, it says cultural districts are a global phenomenon and they come in all shapes and sizes. There are 19 states that have formal cultural district programs like Iowa, Louisiana, and Rhode Island. They were early adopters of the policy, according to Tom Borup, who wrote his doctoral dissertation on cultural districts. So for me, when you read something like that, that means not enough of us know about cultural districts. And it's something I would love to hear more about and maybe even talk more about on my show. And I'm just hoping that...
Tom is local, right? You know, Tom Borup lives in this community, lives and works mm-hmm. here. He's married to Harry Waters Jr., who I think you may know or be familiar with. And so, you know, I would love to come on and talk with Tom and you and talk about
the district. We'll see if we can make that happen. I'm so sorry we run out of time, Andrea. Thank you so much for joining us. Councilmember Andrea Jenkins has been joining us, and I really appreciate you giving us your thoughts. You take care of yourself.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
You too.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNC's apply.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detecttheSOS.com to learn more.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.